Today, what I'm going to be talking about is how we were able to leverage social data in order to pivot the newspaper industry, which, as I'm sure a lot of you know, has hit some harder times. In fact, it's conferences just like this that have been, or that are talking about the cause of so many of their pains. So we're talking about how we actually leveraged what they would consider some of their top competitors and turn them into more productive, profitable organizations. Before that, I'll just tell you a bit about myself. Again, for those of you who were here with me yesterday, you already know, my background is rooted heavily in econometrics. What is econometrics? It's statistical economics. When I started working with T2, which is an agency, been around for about 30 plus years, marketing and advertising consultancy, I decided that I would take some of these econometric models and apply them to social data, CRM data, marketing data, web data, and see what we can learn from some of these raw, unstructured data sets. Turns out it actually worked, and I've been running with that ever since. I'm best friends with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Remember everybody? I'm also an avid writer. I write pretty consistently for my personal blog, corypadvin.com. I write for our corporate blog, t2marketinginternational.com. And this was, it might as well have been this morning, considering my time clock is keeping me up at 2. I speak all over the place, largely about social data. This certainly wasn't here. But it was somewhere that in the summer finds itself even hotter than it is here. And as you can tell, I'm doing more or less the exact same pose. When I speak, it's largely about marketing, largely about data, but one thing that I do encourage everyone to do is to interrupt me. You'll notice that I talked yesterday in a workshop, which was 2 hours long, focusing on these types of concepts, social data. I've done four-day summits, which were 4 hours a day on more extensive insights into how to use these data, how to use components of Excel in order to analyze some of these raw systems. So 45 minutes when there is a focus on data, I never think is enough. 2 hours often isn't enough. So if there's something that you're curious about, something you don't understand, our moderator seems to have abandoned us, so you're left on your own to ask whatever questions you have. And this is how you can reach me. Don't worry, when we have some questions, I'll have this slide back up, so you can feel free to take a picture now, or you can get in touch with me afterwards. Again, even when we're done here today, I love answering questions, I love retweeting, I love tweeting back, so definitely feel free to reach out with anything you might want to know. I'm always happy to answer. And that QR code is an homage to a dying product. So, just a couple of questions before we get started. If you have an offline newspaper subscription, 2 people in the room. If you have a daily newspaper subscription to anything online, doesn't even have to be a newspaper subscription per se, but if you pay to get news every day online. So quite a few more people. Now, let me know if you pay to receive news from a newspaper source. So if you're paying to get, say, access to in-depth content from a VentureBeat or from some other news source that isn't a traditional news or print media company. So that's many people. That's because people don't like to pay for things. And tell me if you've ever used social or if you regularly use social, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it might be, to get some news and information from around the world. So everyone in the room, more or less, almost. One holdout in the back. So there are a couple important facts that come out of the fact that no one raised their hand when we talked about the fact that people are not buying newspapers, people are not getting their daily subscriptions. They are, however, jumping into the realm of social and digesting all of this news for free, often in real time. Well, between the 5 years of 2003 to 2008, there was a pretty significant decline in newspaper subscriptions in the United States. That, however, was really made much more significant when in 2008, Facebook really exploded onto the market, Twitter exploded onto the market, businesses now had platforms in which they could interact. 2008 was the launch of certain advertising capabilities on a lot of these networks, so it really became now a place where businesses could be seen as legitimate. Between 2009 and 2014, 1 year less, there was a 10% higher drop in newspaper circulations across the United States. Definitely not a good couple of years, a good decade for the newspaper industry. And you could see all that right here. If you'll notice, every one of these is in the hot, is over 5%, with the exception of a little, the first half of 2012. Everything else is significantly higher. And once we get to a point down here, we've plateaued, everybody sort of starts to level off. Those who want their newspapers will keep them. Those who don't, no longer have them. What we're looking at here is the drop in revenues. Ad revenues consistently dropped throughout that entire period for print. And we saw slight increases in digital ad revenues, which were the darker reds up there. But obviously, we're not seeing enough to make up for the massive drop in print ad revenue. So what are they to do? Well, this is happening for quite a few reasons. First, we talked about this. It's a shame that this resolution is no good. This was a great image. It looks so good. It's somebody holding a phone with Facebook on it. A massive portion of the United States uses Facebook in order to digest news. An equally large, or close to as large, part of the population uses YouTube to digest all of their visual news. And you guessed it, what's the third one? 8% of the population is using Twitter in order to digest all their news. And that's largely because Twitter has been sort of shifted and found its calling in real-time events, in live tweeting, in event-based tweeting, which is why we've actually seen a little bit of a drop in the last few years of people using Twitter in order to digest their news. That said, 8% of the population who are turning, by the way, all these stats are for people who use it as a first source. There are still millions of more people using Facebook for the purpose of digesting news. It's just that 30% of the population uses it as their first source of digesting that content. So obviously, things aren't looking great at this point for the newspaper industry. What are they to do? We were approached by an organization who'd prefer to remain nameless, only because publicly traded and trying to keep what's working for them out of what's working for local competitors. They did agree to allow for all their data to be used, with the exception of which newspaper company it is. What I can say is it is one of the top three newspaper services across the country. Dozens of papers across the United States in every major market, some of which I'm sure a lot of people here do actually, or maybe used to, subscribe to. They came to us and said, we don't know what to do. We know that Facebook is working in terms of driving traffic, and obviously, as we saw, one of the main sources of revenue for the newspaper industry has been online advertising. But the problem is that once they hit that paywall, we saw how few people are raising their hands in the room when it comes to daily subscription services online. When people hit the paywall, they'll just wait a few days before their cookies clear, and then they'll come right back to it. So what they were asking is, how can we start to leverage Facebook? How can we start to leverage the data that's obviously working in terms of driving that traffic, in terms of driving that interest, in order to drive up our subscriptions, in order to drive up the interest in our product, or one of our products that we can then leverage into ad dollars? Don't forget, the subscription side is a very small component of what makes up the income of a newspaper organization. The majority of the money that's made there is coming from ad revenues. So they don't necessarily care. I shouldn't say they don't care, but their main concern is not necessarily, can we get people past the paywall, filling in one of these archaic, and I'm sure you've seen these paywalls that exist for newspapers online. They have to be the oldest forms. I don't know that there is a responsive system that exists for newspapers, and that's because in the newspaper industry, there are certain approved vendors for newspaper subscriptions, and they have to, or they choose to, I should say, industry-wide, go through those. And the result is, when people get to them, when they're so used to seeing the simplicity of plugging in your credit card, the simplicity of, you know, NFC technology where I can pay through my phone, when I'm using a form that looks like it was put together in Eastern Europe 2 weeks ago by somebody promising me wealth and riches if I just give them my social security number, I certainly don't want to put in my credit card information. I don't care how many HTTP SSSSSSs there are up there, I'm not giving my information. That wasn't their big concern. Their big concern is driving up traffic. Their big concern is getting people to the site, putting people into segmented email databases so that they can market products to them, they can market for their advertisers, and they can drive up interest in different services that they might have. So what did we do? One of the main things that we discussed yesterday, those of you who were in the workshop can attest to this, is we talked quite a bit about the concept of hypertargeting. A major theme over the course of the entire day was figuring out exactly who people are, not necessarily according to some traditional demographics, but looking more into what their interests are, what their behaviors are, figuring out what the process is through which they go through a website, figuring out what the behaviors are when it comes to social, finding out something a little bit more personal about them, and then creating very systemically targeted messages that relate to them on that personal level. So ultimately, what we wanted to do was we wanted to create these audience pockets by hyper-targeting users according to those tastes, those preferences, and some of the exhibited tastes and preferences in terms of navigating habits across these newspaper websites. One of the benefits that we have when it comes to these kinds of sites is, despite the fact that they are seeing huge drops in subscriptions, we are still seeing massive amounts of traffic coming to and from these websites and to and from several pages. We actually insisted that they expand their, for a few different properties, expand the number of pages you can visit before hitting that paywall so we can get even more information about what the navigating habits are of these users. When you only allow someone to see three pages before you put up that paywall and stop them from visiting your site, you're not going to find out that they actually spent the entire time on their visit on the sports page. You won't find out that the entire time they were navigating, they were in Home and Garden, that they visited three specific areas of the website and completely ignored what you thought they were most interested in, or where they even initially clicked through. So in expanding and allowing them to track much more, the amount of data that was collected was much more significant. So obviously, when we're talking about our initial data, there is a lot, of course, in the newspaper industry. They do have local data in terms of what the household size is, the makeup of the homeowners, the makeup of the inhabitants. They have interest in according to what types of products people indicate they're interested in when they first subscribe. So for example, I'm sure whenever you've subscribed to something online, you'll see that little light box that says, pick five categories you're interested in. Well, that's not necessarily because they're trying to provide you with only things that matter, but because then they can market to you through advertisers, they can put you into different email lists based on different categories, and then when they have that kind of segmented data, which was lucky for them because it does give them somewhat more segmented data than a lot of industries have, we can start with that and then work our way into figuring out what they're interested in. We can expand on what they're interested in by tying in social profiles or social logins. We can expand on what they're interested in based on those navigation habits I was just talking about. We can look into purchasing behavior. One thing that tends to be overlooked is the ability to target people on Facebook according to purchasing behavior, buyer behavior, in your behavior targeting mechanisms in Facebook advertising. I don't know why that's ignored, but buying behavior and the habits you exhibit when on the purchasing journey are extremely important because they give you an idea of who your most valuable audience is from a point of immediate conversion. And if you're selling ad space, knowing that buying behavior does allow you to say, here's your audience that is most apt for purchase in the nearest future, here's your audience that has the longest buying cycle. With these kinds of in-depth insights, we're able to learn much more about them, and we're able to provide all that information, or we're able to use that information in order to develop those audience clusters. Another thing that we're able to do, and this is something that we spent a little bit of time on yesterday, is look at some of these insights and figure out correlations that exist within them. One of the benefits of looking at correlations within audience habits, audience demographics, is you figure out, and I'll use a simple example, one of the examples that most people can guess. The assumption is usually that the younger you are, the less money you make. The assumption is also that when you are living in a single-person residence at a certain age and you're not married, then you're also making less money. With that information in mind, you're able to assume that those who are in that category are not going to be interested in higher price point products, so you won't push those products to them. That's all well and good, and that's naturally inferred by anybody looking at a general audience. What we're talking about is taking some of these social data, some of these bits of information like that purchasing behavior, taking some of the bits of information like their interests, like the other behaviors exhibited in terms of whether or not they have adopted technology earlier than their friends, if they have an interest in travel, if they're planning to travel, or if they've recently come back from travel, being able to know what their favorite cities are. Taking all that information and finding correlations between those, running basic correlative tests, allows you now to create much more targeted messages. So now that we have the interests, the behaviors mapped out, we know who these people are, that's when we can start to put together exactly what our key performance indicators are going to be. Now, if you take anything at all away from the run-through of this campaign today, the only thing that I would suggest is that you jot down that if you're not sure of what you're measuring to find your success, you can never know if your program was successful. The problem with so many of these campaigns is that they're not effectively outlined, or the KPIs are not effectively outlined, and no one ever actually knows what it is they're measuring. People assume that if there's more traffic to the site, then something worked. That if your Facebook fans or followers have increased, if there's more engagement, if there is a higher amount of conversions, then something worked. One of the things that Ted was talking about, which I thought was really interesting, is when he was talking about if you weren't in this session before, he was talking about a PPC campaign on AdWords and how they saw a 1,200% jump in ROI from that campaign. Well, one of the attendees in that session asked how they knew that they saw this was all attributed to PPC. Well, a basic tag manager, knowing exactly how your campaign is working, following people through the buying journey, is crucial. Just starting something to see if it yields results or if you can actually say there's a result doesn't really work. And we asked the question yesterday, is this causal or is it correlative? Well, when you have proper tracking in place, when you have the right KPIs in place, key performance indicators, then you can definitively say this is causal. So what are some of the KPIs that we were looking at? Obviously, one of the most important ones were things like outliers, influence points. When we saw that there was a higher number of click-throughs on a particular ad, when we saw that there was a significant spike in traffic on the website day over day or week over week, we wanted to figure out exactly what was happening at those particular points of time. When was our ad being shown? What was being said in the ad? Who was the audience coming to those pages? We also wanted to look in terms of what the half-life was of our audience. Now, who's familiar with the term half-life? Who's familiar with the term half-life when it comes to social content and content marketing? So the half-life of a piece of content is the amount of time that it takes for it to receive half of the engagement it will ever get. So while your Facebook post might receive 250 engagements, whether those are clicks, conversions, shares, likes, comments, you define the parameters of what an engagement is to you. If it receives 250 clicks over the course of 6 days, your half-life is the amount of time it took for that post to receive 125. So if in the first 45 minutes of me posting something, I get 125 engagement points, that means that my half-life is 45 minutes. Even though the shelf life of my piece of content is 6 days, it's actually only really most engaging in those first 45 minutes. Ultimately, what we were looking at is how can we stretch out a piece of content's half-life, whether that was through the actual content strategy of content being shared to drive engagement to the site. How can we elongate the amount of time that it takes to receive half of that engagement? Why? Because the longer we can keep a piece of content active, the longer a piece of content can stay relevant and engaging to people, the less we have to actually invest in getting more content out there and pushing more ads out to our key demographics. So it's figuring out what's engaging these people we're going after the most. And of course, when it comes to this content that we were putting together in a campaign like this, we want to look at what kinds of amplification we're going to have. In the last campaign, you know, NetBase has amplification models. This is a this is what Simply Measured offers in terms of posts. By the way, if you haven't, if you're not familiar with Simply Measured, or you haven't used Simply Measured, I love Simply Measured for the purpose of social analytics. It does provide excellent insights into your content, and it's one of the best products that I've found that allows for the complete streamlining of every one of your social portals, as well as your hub, your website, whatever it is you're driving people to. So it's a great product. That's just a plug. FYI, I have no vested interest in seeing Simply Measured succeed other than I like it, and I generally tend to share the tools that I like with people I'm talking to. So we're looking at amplification. What are we sharing in this content strategy, in this content program, that's leading to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people seeing it, and an increase, obviously, when it comes to that amplification, millions of relevant audience members seeing it, who are then sharing it, clicking on it, going to the website, and actually converting on whatever offers might exist there. Now, obviously, once we've built out how we plan to measure the success of this campaign, then it's time to start building out the variety of offers. We built out a little over 25 different offers that existed. Anybody who's worked either in or around the newspaper industry knows that creating an offer is it's a snap of a finger. And if you've worked in that industry, then you know, particularly online, there are literally every paper will have hundreds, if not thousands, depending on the size of the paper, of offers. Now, those offers can be every day. In some cities, less so in the United States now, but in Europe, it could be day and night with your evening post as well, which, you know, was sort of abandoned here several years ago. It can be something along the lines of only Sunday plus digital, digital only, digital throughout the week, whatever it is, there are countless offers. What we put together were a selection of offers that weren't necessarily designed around what we wanted, but rather a selection of offers around five primary offers with a variety of creatives targeted towards different demographics that they wanted to appeal to. The demographics they were going after were primarily not millennials per se, because at the end of the day, an 18-year-old was, unless they have to for class, not gonna subscribe to a newspaper, but somewhat older, young professionals to over the age of 30 is what they were going after. Generally, young professionals married with a medium to high income is who they were trying to attract online, simply because those with higher income who have that disposable income would be willing to spend on certain products that exist online. That said, we knew that there existed potential in terms of secondary, tertiary audiences, people that we hadn't even thought of. So one of the things that we did was we left a lot of our offers very open in terms as controls, so that we could see exactly what was happening and modify the results of the other 20-some offers that we had out on the table. From there, it was all a question of building those campaigns. Where we decided to build those campaigns was exclusively in Facebook, and the reason for that wasn't because we didn't know, we figured everything else was a waste of time, but rather because this brand needed to show that there was potential to generate revenue from new media so they could make a greater investment into it. And the most active campaigns that existed, the most active channels that existed were channels like Facebook. So they needed to make that investment. They needed to show that any investment could yield tremendous results and that it was worth making a more robust investment in order to start selling ad space in a newsfeed. Ah, sponsored stories. We know that those exist. But now we wanted to find that there was the potential to drive, to actually increase the amount that could be spent, or the amount that could be charged for a sponsored story within their newsfeed, or a sponsored ad on their behalf, based on the highly qualified clicks, the highly qualified engagement that was coming from the audience they were targeting on Facebook. And of course, probably the most important step after your measurement is the testing phase. The amount of testing that goes into a program like this, and I mean, really the best way to define something like this is a program built out of desperation. When you're watching an industry that over the last decade has virtually disappeared from the limelight, and the novelty of holding a paper is something that a lot of people simply don't experience anymore or would never experience because they're walking around with a newspaper in their pocket that has stories from every single corner of every single part of the world. You have to test absolutely everything because there is absolutely no way to say this is who we want, this is the most valuable audience, and this is where we want to spend our money. Up until that point, that approach had failed. So what our job was, and what every job should be in a program like this, is to test whatever comes to light. If you see that there was a 14-year-old who clicked on the story, well, figure out why and try and create content that'll relate to 14-year-olds. If you see that there was a huge influx of existing subscribers who were clicking on this content and going to the website, figure out what they did on the website and then build out new offers, new campaigns in order to entice them to continue going there. Why? Because one of the things, and this is what I mentioned before, if you're already a subscriber, in this case, you're not necessarily at full value. It's more in the value of advertising dollars, and in some areas, the advertising dollars are worth much more. So what we were trying to do is figure out how can we extract the full value of every one of the both existing, non-existing subscribers, people who are fans, who have not yet become fans, but have friends who are fans, who are in a certain demographic. How can we extract the complete value from every single one of them through advertising dollars that can be charged, through increased subscriptions to new services and products, etc. Obviously, throughout the entire program, the analysis is going to be completely crucial. You can talk all you want about focusing only on the conversion, the direct conversions, but through ongoing analysis, you can improve on the rhetoric. Tiny changes, like putting, and I'm sure most of us have heard this, putting the word free in front of something, all of a sudden, it's the most popular thing you've ever seen. Especially when you're talking about targeting young adults, the word free is gonna drive as much clicks as you can imagine, simply because that's what the market has said it's interested in hearing. Once we've made some changes, testing again. To be perfectly frank, in these kinds of programs where you're working with new media, where you're working with changing demographics, changing media, really. Here's a perfect example. This morning, Twitter rolled out a new algorithmic update. So from now on, instead of seeing a real-time news feed, you're going to see the most popular tweets in your network on top of that feed. So whereas I might really want to see what is going on right now, I'm likely going to see what's going on right now according to popularity. And I saw one great, you can look at that in two different ways. You can either be upset about it because you like that real-time news feed, you like seeing what's going on every second of the day. And one really interesting thing that was posted in Ad Age was a really cool way to look at this is to say, I've always missed out on seeing that tweet that has 1,000 retweets in a live environment, and now I can actually see what the most popular tweets are around a particular event. Take, for example, the Super Bowl. I'm sure that even if you were sitting on Twitter the entire time, you must have missed dozens of amazing tweets, amazing posts, and now the idea is those will all be readily available, so the most popular pieces of content become more popular. Well, it's those kinds of changes that require you to never stop testing. These programs are never finished, unless, of course, it's finished. But these programs are not finished evolving because social, particularly social advertising, is 100% a live environment. It is consistently evolving. There are changes to it on absolutely every single front, every single day. Even though you might not see it, your ad might all of a sudden start showing to a group of people because it was shared, and now you're getting some clicks from a third party that you hadn't targeted originally, but that someone had shared to a particular demographic that you can now go after. Testing is something that has to happen all the time, and what might have worked this week might fail completely next week, simply because you extracted all the potential from a certain test right away. So, what did we learn when we were running this campaign? Well, we put together, like I said, all these offers, we were consistently running a variety of ads, a variety of content approaches, whether those content Those pieces of content being shared were in a live environment on the actual feed itself, or if we had been pushing these in a dark space to only those audiences we targeted, we found out quite a bit, which was particularly valuable. Namely, that over 70% of the audience that we targeted that was actually converting in one capacity or another were women. Considering the fact that their key demographic was men for the subscription services and women for the email services, we were really surprised to find out that a lot of the subscription services that led to conversions were women. We also found out, again, we were going after 30 to 49 year olds, and we found that the audience most valuable was actually 5 years younger on both fronts. We found that 25 year olds were actually converting for a certain set of those offers, not necessarily everything. And we also found that the majority of those people, 63, 64%, were parents. And they were interested, again, in certain products, not others. One thing that we could find conclusively across pushing a paid product on social media is that nobody ever wants it. Unless it's something on Kickstarter where you absolutely have to have it, which has just been the death of my credit card, is seeing things that I need right now, but then 9 months later when it hasn't arrived yet, I don't want anymore. And yet there they are. But the one thing that you can say conclusively is that this generation of content digesting individuals online want that content for free. And they are really not necessarily going to be budging, which was somewhat of a point of concern simply because this was a platform that needed to be monetized, and the options for monetization just decreased by about 40%. Now, everything was rooted in trying to find a way to monetize them after the fact with some sort of free product. They also want everything to be completely related to them. The most responsive of these demographics happened to be people whom we had targeted with much more customized messages according to some of those demographics we discovered, for example, the age range, some of the interest categories. When we were pushing out those controls that fell into a very generic space, we found that, obviously, the control environment where there was nothing targeted to a specific group, a specific age, wasn't something that generated a lot of response. When, however, we talked about being a parent, when we talked about a particular sports team, when we talked about whether back to school, for example, that's when we saw a tremendous response from very specific groups of people. So, all that was found. We took all those bits of information and we drove them into one very specific, very focused campaign. The reason why we drove that campaign was because we had figured out here's where the highest value audience is in terms of who they are. Like we said, some of these women, 25 to 44, with children, figuring out exactly who they are, figuring out exactly what their interests were based on responsiveness to some of these customized ads as opposed to the generic ones. And we took the entirety of the ad budget. This, by the way, I should point out that this six-step approach was over the course of less than 8 weeks. This testing phase is not something that takes, 12, 18, 24 months. In 8 weeks, we were able to learn all of this because we're not putting up a billboard and then finding out if people showed up at the retail location. We're not publishing a magazine ad and then 6 months after we finish the ad, find out if subscriptions to our service or if calls to our business have gone up. This is all happening in real time. So this morning, we could put up this ad, and tonight, we could say, it's not reaching the right people, and the response isn't high enough, but our cost is rising in this particular area. There's no value to what we're spending. We need to remove this as one of the components. So in those 8 weeks, we were able to find out everything we needed to know, and then over the course of the remaining 10 months for this particular sample, we were able to focus entirely on the areas that were deemed the most successful. Of course, we kept controls running throughout the program simply because you do have to keep an eye on what's happening. So how'd we do? Cost per conversion decreased by 50%. That cost per conversion obviously ranged in terms of what types of things they were converting for, but on the whole, we were looking at a massive drop in conversion to sign people up for a variety of products, namely this one free product, and I'll explain why cost per conversion actually does go down. I mentioned to you that it's not all about paid subscriptions, and that was something we learned very quickly. What we realized, and once we were actually able to sit down and figure out, okay, what's working, what's not, and how can we actually, how are these people of any value to you? Once we determined the potential benefit of getting people involved in this free product simply because of ad space that we're able to sell, as people become more understood, their value, as I'm sure many of us here know, the value to an advertiser of a well-outlined audience is significantly higher than just pushing content out to the general public. As we're able to directly link the campaigns, because all of these people are being tracked according to tag management systems, because all of them are falling into unique lists, unique services, we are able to say definitively, here's how much this audience is able to generate in terms of revenue as a result of their involvement in this particular campaign. And from that campaign, we were able to see a 730% increase in the return on investment. And our conversion rate was over 11%. I know what you're saying, that's not a very good conversion rate. When you consider the fact that two people subscribe to newspapers right now in this room, which is reflective of the fact that over the course of a decade, we've seen a 60% drop in the overall circulation, and we're seeing a double-digit drop year over year, every year in print and overall advertising income, an 11% conversion, which leads to a 700% return, is actually phenomenal for an industry that the majority of people here and people all over would agree is dying. And that's not a word that I'm using, that's a word that they were using coming into this program, and they're the ones who have been in this industry forever. All that to say, happy to take questions. I know we have a couple of minutes left here, so I'll open it up to you, and thank you all very much. So in any campaign that we have put together, we have a discretionary fund over the course of the entirety of that campaign, whether it's running over 6 months, which is designed exclusively to focus on multivariate testing according to the most important variables. When you have carte blanche to test anything, that's great, but when you have the ability to test maybe a couple of landing page changes, a couple of rhetoric changes in terms of what you're saying in the ads, then you really have to be very picky as to what you're doing. The difference is, particularly when it comes to new media, I would still categorize the changes in AdWords that come up as a part of that new media. In new media, because these things happen so quickly, because there's such a mass evolution in what works and what doesn't, Google's algorithm changes 500 times a year, and they don't mention to you that 1.5 times a day, Google's placement algorithm, both for AdWords and for search, is under constant change. But the fact is that what works today in something that moves this quickly will not work tomorrow. That's just something you have to accept, because those that maybe clicked or those that maybe converted today are gone tomorrow, and you need to start finding new potential in different areas. So testing anything that can be tested, even if it's with a tiny budget, a tiny test budget tacked on to your overall ad budget is something that really can go, just explaining it in that way can go a very long way. It doesn't have to be, I should say, it doesn't mean that your whole campaign needs to be testing and you never do anything. There does have to be decisive moments where you say, this is where we're gonna focus our efforts, but the testing allows you to continually make updates to that overall campaign so it keeps driving results. When you say sponsored, you mean on their newsfeed? Basically what they needed to figure out is, as a paid news publication, leveraging what is essentially, we saw 30% of the population sees Facebook as a news source. So when a paid news application is leveraging a news source that is, for all intents and purposes, free to digest, how are they able to monetize that platform? Essentially the same way a newspaper website is a hub wherein they could charge for ad space, they need to figure out a way to charge for space in the actual newsfeed, or they needed to find potential to charge for space in the actual newsfeed. So the approach there, which is something really that wasn't a major focus, because it was just trying to figure out any area where Facebook can be leveraged for monetization. They just wanted to explore it. So that area was really about figuring out how to start sponsoring the same way, you know, BuzzFeed has sponsored content. By the way, I don't know what brands you work with, but if you are approached by BuzzFeed, it is unbelievably expensive in a lot of cases, depending on what market you're in. But they charge huge amounts of money for sponsored content, and that sponsored content can be something as small as, you know, sponsored by Corey up top, and then you have an article. They wanted to find a way to approach that in a similar way, because now all of a sudden it's your content that is advertising, less so than your banner ads, which no longer work on their site. Yeah, so the upselling produced ad revenue is, so the produced ad revenue is coming from, there's a, one of the products that became a major focus was a circular that goes out, a free circular, free product, you simply have to be registered with it. We were able to transition that to become registered through your Facebook profile. That circular features sponsored products for a variety of local, like this was something that was rolled out to one market and then expanded to 30 plus others. It was a circular that has products, coupons, discounts, whatever it is, that goes out once a week, and those who have placements in it are paying ad dollars. So effectively what we were looking to do there was create separate circulars based on the targeted demographics outlined in the list because of sign-ups through Facebook, getting a little bit more information about who they are, what they clicked on, and then being able to say, here's, no longer is it just, these are the zip codes people live in, send them, based on where your business is, send them an offer by paying for space in this circular. Now it was more, here are the zip codes that these people live in, and also, this group is interested in back-to-school sales, this group is interested in tickets to see the, you know, a team this weekend, this group is interested in, you know, XYZ. So now, increasing that that amount that each individual subscriber is worth from an advertising dollar standpoint, which was all, that particular measurement was done through their own internal system that measures ad revenue per subscriber. But those were how we matched that. Going to a subscriber who either does or does not, but they do not have to subscribe in order to receive that circular. But they do have to opt in for the circular. It doesn't come in a bag of junk mail. That was the big difference. It's not something that you simply receive because you're in the area. It's something you do have to opt in for. So it comes separately. It's basically it's the equivalent of a weekly miniature coupon book, which features products from sponsors around the city. Anything else? I think we are out of time. But thank you all very much. Enjoy your lunch.